WML News at 7. Good morning, I'm Heather Curtis. New this hour, the European Union stocking up on the Pfizer vaccine. The EU just signed a contract for a guaranteed 900 million doses of Pfizer's vaccine, according to the EU Commission President. The EU may buy more than 1.8 billion doses through 2023. If you're flying this summer for a long-awaited trip, will you need a COVID test? AAA's Chip Morgan.
For international air travel, passengers coming to the United States, including U.S. citizens, are required to have a negative COVID-19 test result or documentation of recovery from COVID-19 before they board a flight to the United States.
He says there are no test requirements for domestic travel in the U.S. except for Hawaii. This year's Republican nominating convention in Virginia happening today, and it's vastly different, not only due to COVID, but also to the sheer number of candidates running for the three statewide seats.
All of the delegates are not meeting in one geographic location, but instead will be drive-through voting at 39 different locations around the state of Virginia.
Dr. Karen Holt, political scientist at Virginia Tech, says the nearly 54,000 delegates also for the first time have to rank their choice of candidates.
That's something that the delegates have to learn, and that's something that the candidates are working hard to educate the people so that they can get them to vote for them, if not for his first choice, then for a second choice.
Barbara Britt, WMAL and WMAL.com.
Virginia Democrats are holding their primary on June 8th. The attorney for George Floyd's family, reacting to yesterday's federal indictment of four former Minneapolis police officers accused of violating Ford's constitutional rights and failing to provide medical care.
Attorney Ben Crump says George Floyd's family is encouraged by the charges and eager to see continued justice. The grand jury also indicting Chauvin in a separate arrest in 2017 as he awaits sentencing on murder and manslaughter charges in the state case, where former officers Thomas Lane, Jay King, and Tu Tao head to trial in August. Jeff Manasso, Fox News.
Floyd's death and other controversial interactions between black people and police prompting Loudoun County to study whether it should create a police department to take over law enforcement duties from the sheriff's department. Sheriff Mike Chapman tells WMAL's The Larry O'Connor Show.
But hey, look at all these things that are going on nationally, but look what we're doing here, that the people are very satisfied. We've been very fortunate. We've got a lot of community engagement. People like what we're doing.
But Board of Supervisors Chair Phyllis Randall told Chapman in a meeting this week.
Let's be incredibly clear. What's happening right now with the racial reckoning and the equity march, it's not just because of George Floyd.
She says it's because of hundreds of black men who've died unjustifiably at the hands of police. WMAL Sports, the Nats beat the Yankees 11-4. That series continues today at 105. The Caps fell to the Flyers 4-2. The two teams play again tonight at 7. Traffic and weather next.
WMAL-FM, Woodbridge, Washington.
WMAL traffic, here's Michelle Murray in the Hadid Carpet Cleaning Traffic Center.
In Annandale, watch out for accident activity on the outer loop of the Beltway at Gallows Road. Everything, though, has been moved from the right lane to the right shoulder. Watch out for a brief tap on the brakes through the accident scene. Also, keep in mind in the district in Northwest that a portion of 9th Street is closed between Kennedy Street and Longfellow Street for utility work. Now from GarageJoyRepair.com, the WMAL Stormwatch 7 forecast.
A few scattered showers will be possible early on this morning, but we will see a little bit of sunshine breaking through midday. High temperatures today should reach the mid-60s. Some isolated showers will be possible through the afternoon hours, mainly north of D.C. Later on tonight, temperatures dip into the 40s through the region. Cool start to Mother's Day. Mother's Day, mostly cloudy skies. Some highly isolated showers, the best chance north and west. High temperatures in the mid-60s. I'm 7 News meteorologist Alex Lee at the Stormwatch 7 Weather Center.
I'm Heather Curtis on WMAL.
Now, the Saturday morning update.
105.9 FM, WMAL.
It's the Saturday morning update on WMAL. I'm Rick Fowler. It is hour two when John Gizzi joins us, White House correspondent, chief political columnist at Newsmax.com. John, good morning.
Good morning to you, Rick.
The Republican Party will determine its gubernatorial candidate today in the state of Virginia. Tell us about the process, John.
A virtual convention is what it is. People who participate in the Republican Party in Virginia signed up to weigh in and vote for a nominee for governor this weekend. Roughly 59,000 residents of the Old Dominion are going to participate in this virtual convention and thus conform to the social distancing by not being in a convention hall at all. There are five major candidates for governor, and they will be able to choose them by voting on their computer. But given the total, it is very unlikely, sources tell me, that we will know exactly who won until the beginning of next week. The leading contenders are both businessmen, highly successful, who've never held office before. Glenn Youngkin, who used to work for the Cargill Group, and Pete Snyder, who's been an entrepreneur in a variety of businesses. Both have spread money around for other candidates, and polls show them the leaders. Trailing behind are Kirk Cox, the former Speaker of the House of Delegates, considered the establishment candidate, and State Senator Amanda Chase, also known as Donald Trump in heels for her outspoken conservatism. And then there's Sergio La Puente, who has a beautiful story of coming from poverty in Mexico to the U.S., learning English, serving in the military, and becoming a top Pentagon official under Donald Trump. In any event, it will be most interesting to watch this unique means of selecting a candidate for governor, and it also includes the rating of candidates from favorite to last choice. The numbers will be added up in the end, and in an unusual way, the bottom candidate will be eliminated so that his or her votes can go to the second place finisher or the first place finisher. It's a little more complicated, but it also is fair, sources tell me, to long shot candidates and those who might be written off. It'll be fun to watch.
So what's happening over on the Democrat side? Terry McAuliffe is in the race.
They are having a primary, and voters will go and select a candidate. Terry McAuliffe is trying to be only the second governor in the history of the Old Dominion state to serve two non-consecutive terms, the governor being the only one in the country limited to one term only and then having to step down. It will be most interesting because Terry McAuliffe almost seems a figure from the past. He was one of Bill Clinton's closest supporters, top fundraisers, and served in the Clinton administration. The Democratic Party has since moved to the left since Bill Clinton has left office, and there are several state legislators and minor candidates who say that McAuliffe's time has come and passed. But for now, the former governor is favored to be nominated and then take a chance at becoming the future governor.
Let's turn to the Republican Party and Liz Cheney and Elise Stefanik. Whichever way this goes, John, what do you see as the impact on party unity overall?
Well, one has to look carefully at the reasons they're even having this vote. It was back in February, Rick, I reported for you how Liz Cheney was challenged amid the Republican conference. I talked to one member who went in there fully intending to vote against her, and then leader Kevin McCarthy looked directly at everyone and said, "We can't break up the team. I need my team." And she survived with only 61 votes against her. Sources among the Republican members of Congress say if she simply had focused on her job as conference chairman and kept her mouth shut about Donald Trump and the election, there would not be the vote that's coming up next Wednesday when she's likely to lose to New York Congresswoman Stefanik. But she continues to say how proud she was to vote for impeachment, that it is, quote, poisonous, unquote, to say that there was fraud in the election, and she provokes the former president to send out missives calling her, among other things, a warmongering fool. Well, in any event, the party does not need a debate on these things, and many members are going to vote for Congresswoman Stefanik just to shut Liz Cheney up. I will add one more thing. Liz Cheney's overall rating from the American Conservative Union is 78%. She's to the left of her father, former Vice President Dick Cheney, when he was in the House. But it's still conservative. On the other hand, Elise Stefanik is a 43.4% with the American Conservative Union for her four terms in the House. This is not uncommon for people from the Northeast. They vote for appropriations and spending, which weigh heavy in these votes. Nonetheless, many conservatives are going to choose Stefanik over Cheney because, as one member put it, I just want to get rid of Liz Cheney.
Being a White House correspondent, you are obviously in contact with Jen Psaki, the Biden administration, White House press secretary. Revelation this week in the David Axelrod podcast that she did, actually two revelations of note. Number one, they're not big fans of him talking to the media impromptu. And what was her other revelation?
Her other revelation is that she agreed to take the job under the condition that she would leave within a year or a little more. So that means when it comes to May of 2022, there will be another press secretary. Now, I've seen some press secretaries serve short tenures. I've never seen a press secretary term limit himself or herself. So this is a bit unusual.
And is there any speculation as to who would succeed Jen Psaki?
Yes, it's already started. Karine Jean-Pierre, who is her number two deputy press secretary, is considered the favorite. Now, among other things, she was in the Obama White House in the Political Affairs Department and was chief of staff to Kamala Harris during her vice presidential campaign. She is also openly gay and very proud of it. I happen to know her domestic partner, Suzanne Malveaux of CNN. We were White House correspondents together. What makes this even more interesting is that the other candidate mentioned is also a proud member of the LGBT community, and that is Ned Price, State Department spokesman. He was a CIA analyst who resigned in 2017 because he did not want to work under a presidency of Donald Trump. So it seems a very good bet to say that history will be made when Jen Psaki steps down and the next press secretary will be the first openly gay spokesman for a president in history.
John Gizzi, White House correspondent, chief political columnist at Newsmax.com. As always, John, thank you for the insight.
Always a pleasure, Rick, and we'll have a report next week.
7:16, it is the Saturday morning update on WMAL, Mother's Day weekend. A happy Mother's Day to you. Traffic and weather next, and then we'll be back with Cheryl Atkinson. Lieutenant Colonel Tony Schaefer's coming up, KT McFarland. But first, Michelle Murray's in the WMAL Traffic Center this morning.
On the outer loop of the Beltway at Gallows Road, accident activity now confined to the right shoulder. Just watch for a brief delay there. No other problems to report on the Beltway at this time. There is a work zone in place in Alexandria on Route 7 east and westbound near 395. One lane gets through in each direction. Also in the district, keep in mind that there is a new traffic pattern in the long-term work zone on Rhode Island Avenue northbound between Florida Avenue and 3rd Street in Northwest. Two lanes will be available to eastbound traffic and three lanes available to the westbound traffic on Rhode Island Avenue. Now from GarageDoorRepair.com, the WMAL Stormwatch 7 forecast.
A few scattered showers will be possible early on this morning, but we will see a little bit of sunshine breaking through midday. High temperatures today should reach the mid-60s. Some isolated showers will be possible through the afternoon hours, mainly north of D.C. Later on tonight, temperatures dip into the 40s of the region. Cool start to Mother's Day. Mother's Day, mostly cloudy skies. Some highly isolated showers, the best chance north and west. High temperatures in the mid-60s. I'm 7 News meteorologist Alex Liggett, the Stormwatch 7 Weather Center.
We're up to 45 degrees in the nation's capital, 7:18, Saturday morning update. It is the Saturday morning update on WMAL, a happy Mother's Day weekend, and we are joined by Cheryl Atkinson. She hosts Full Measure, that's tomorrow morning at 10 o'clock on ABC7. Cheryl, happy Mother's Day to you.
Thank you. Happy Mother's Day to everybody out there.
Well, it may not be a happy Mother's Day for families that are going out and doing shopping for a big Mother's Day brunch at home because of what's going on at the grocery store. And Cheryl, you've got a story on it tomorrow about the shortages at the grocery store, and why now?
Well, I would say that over time, I noticed that there were strange things I couldn't get that were usually easy to get, such as, in my area, cream for the coffee. There were certain brands of soup, certain types of soup. So I asked Lisa Fletcher, who does stories for us from time to time, to look into this. And she brings us a fascinating story on the supply chain. And she's explaining on Sunday why there are weaknesses in our supply chain that impact what we're seeing at the grocery store today. And this does stem from the pandemic, from the shutdowns originally, even though we're now a year into it. Plus, there were things that happened with the supply chain and how producers decided to make choices when they were overwhelmed or they could only produce a certain amount of product. Sometimes, Rick, they decided to just basically consolidate how many products they were making. So that's why you don't have as much variety maybe within a brand as you used to. So it's a really interesting story about why there are limits. And some grocery shelves around the country, you know, we have pictures of this. They're still empty in places that used to just always have product stocked.
And how does that play out regionally around the country?
Well, it does matter because some of this had to do with transportation and some of it had to do with factories in certain areas. So it does matter what region you're in as to what you may have seen shortages and what you may have had plenty of. But I think it's just really interesting, something that I hadn't seen widely reported that impacts people when they go to the grocery store every day, probably wondering why they can't get the same stuff they used to be able to always count on being able to have.
I want to turn to another story you have on tomorrow morning, and that is about China. And we have heard for a long time, and the Chinese have even admitted that they are working on the pursuit of world domination. And we've seen some examples of it, but you really delve into it tomorrow.
Well, yes, because, you know, the Chinese are not bound by the same ethics and rules and international guidelines that we say that we are bound by. And they are at all costs, by their own admission, attempting what I guess we would term as world domination. And one of the things they're doing is trying to create a set of super soldiers, biological, genetic superhuman soldiers. And if you look, these are things that they have actually acknowledged and discussed. One of the other things that surprised me, because I didn't know about it, is they're looking at reportedly trying to create biological weapons that would attack certain people based on DNA but not attack others. And along those lines, if you think about that, believe it or not, we have allowed the Chinese here in the United States to buy up our ancestry registries, you know, those popular places where we submit our DNA so that we can trace our ancestry. We've allowed the Chinese to buy the database of DNA. We've also seen them around the world using different tactics to get DNA. For example, in Morocco, where people are getting Chinese COVID vaccines, the Chinese are requiring the Moroccans to give their DNA first before they can get these vaccines. So a lot of people think this is very concerning, and we'll dig into this on Sunday.
I think there have been some concerns about how tough the Biden administration will be on China in the long run, and the reluctance so far for President Biden to really confront Xi Jinping on the origins of the coronavirus. What do you see in terms of where this may play out on the Hill?
There are just a lot of political divides over this issue. Virtually every country, by the way, hires foreign agents here in the U.S., lobbyists that write bills and lobby the Hill and federal agencies. So when you see your members of Congress and federal agencies taking specific positions on a lot of these issues, they are driven in large part by who has the best lobbyists or who's donating the most money. And when it comes to China, it gets very complicated because although our intelligence agencies have always said they are a top threat to us in many different ways, they've really worked their way into the fabric of American society, whether you're talking about the Confucius Institute that they sponsor at so many colleges around the country, where they've gotten, people would say, their tentacles into the academic institutions and the financing. I mean, there's just all kinds of ways. They're allegedly stealing our intellectual property like no other nation. They've figured out how to get installed in our corporations and sometimes even our federal agencies. So this is of great concern to a lot of people, but exactly what to do about it, it's unclear. And a lot of people think that we haven't done enough because there are conflicted political figures and federal officials who are, in essence, doing the bidding of China or at least protecting them from harsher treatment in the U.S.
Cheryl, last week we talked about an exclusive investigation you have at CherylAtkison.com separating rumor from fact on COVID-19's origin. And we've seen a lot of political dialogue this week as well on the topic.
Well, the interesting part of it is to me that over a year after some in the media falsely claimed the idea that COVID-19 could have possibly come from a Chinese lab, they claimed that was a debunked conspiracy theory. It never was. Now it really is taking hold, as I reported that there are a lot of scientists who have held on to that theory and have some evidence they believe that supports it for many months. And now you see both in the liberal press, the conservative press, and among politicians from both sides, there's greater talk about this likelihood that people are coming to arrive at now versus the way it was treated a year ago when it was brought up.
You can read the whole article at CherylAtkison.com. And as always, Cheryl, thank you very much and enjoy your Mother's Day weekend.
Thanks so much.
7:26, it's the Saturday Morning Update on WMAL. And we're going to be talking with Lieutenant Colonel Tony Schaefer right after the 7:30 news. KT McFarland will join us as well, so stick around.
WMAL-FM, Woodbridge, Washington. America's reopening. Hear it here. 105.9 FM, WMAL. A Cumulus station. News now.
WMAL News at 7:30. Good morning. I'm Heather Curtis. Tens of thousands of Virginians are casting ballots today to choose nominees for governor and other statewide officers during Virginia's Republican convention. Dr. Karen Holtz, a political scientist at Virginia Tech, she says because of pandemic restrictions on gatherings,
all of the delegates are not meeting in one geographic location, but instead will be drive-through voting at 39 different locations around the state of Virginia.
Democrats will choose their gubernatorial nominee in a primary on June 8th. The coronavirus surge in India is getting worse. Two southern states are the latest to impose lockdowns. Today, India reported more than 400,000 confirmed cases, including a record high of more than 4,000 deaths. Americans should be back on the moon in 2024, according to NASA's new administrator, former Senator Bill Nelson.
But we know from my experience that space is hard, particularly when you're going 250,000 miles away.
And tonight, you may be able to see it rocket launch in the sky above our region. NASA Wallops Flight Facility on the eastern shore of Virginia says it's scheduled to launch for tonight at 8:02 if weather conditions are right. Backup days run through May 16th. WMAL Sports, the Nats beat the Yankees 11-4. The Caps fell to the Flyers 4-2. Traffic and weather next on WMAL. WMAL traffic, here's Michelle Murray in the Hadid Carpet Cleaning Traffic Center.
Earlier accident on the outer loop of the Beltway at Gallows Road now cleared away to the right shoulder. No delays remaining. Heads up if you're traveling on Route 50 heading towards the eastern shore. It is jammed up from Cape St. Clair to the Bay Bridge due to an earlier closure at Piney Road. All lanes have been blocked, but looks like everything has been reopened westbound and on the eastbound side, just one lane closed. Now from GarageRepair.com, the WMAL Stormwatch 7 forecast.
Some lingering morning showers will be possible through the mid and late morning hours, but for the most part, we'll see some clearing by midday. High temperatures today in the mid-60s. Again, some isolated shower activity north of town later on this afternoon, but clear skies later on this evening. Temperatures tonight into the 40s. It will be chilly. Clouds on the increase into Mother's Day. Expect mostly cloudy skies Mother's Day. A chance for a few showers north and west, isolated in nature. High temperatures in the mid-60s. I'm 7 News meteorologist Alex Liggett in the Stormwatch 7 Weather Center.
I'm Heather Curtis on 105.9 FM, Washington's Mall, WMAL.
Back again, just like old times. Join me, Dan Bongino, live on WMAL, weekdays at noon, beginning May 24th.
And that is going to be fun. It's 7:36, Saturday Morning Update, WMAL. Lieutenant Colonel Tony Schaefer joins us. He is the president of the London Center for Policy Research, and he's also the author of Operation Dark Heart. Tony, good morning.
Hey, good morning, Rick. Always great to join you.
So President Biden and the First Lady traveled to Plains, Georgia to visit with former President Jimmy Carter and his wife, Rosalynn. There's a photograph that came out from that event that made social media, and it was kind of an odd perspective. It was apparently they used a wide-angle lens. There's a full explanation of that story in the New York Times, but if you've heard about it, it's
bizarre.
Kind of strange picture, but you can check that out in the New York Times. But I wanted to turn to parallels between the Carter administration and the Biden administration so far. You pointed out an interesting article at townhall.com from John Hewlett, and he says in the article, the headline, National Security Under Biden, Welcome Back Carter. Not Cotter, but Carter. Wow.
So, yeah, let's look at just the totality of the momentum. And the one word I think I can safely summarize the first 100 days as the word is wackadoodle, because it's very clear that that either through incompetence or political chicanery, they have taken an economy and turned it into the ditch with one quarter of what they thought they were going to create in the way of jobs. You've seen the disaster of the Southwest border. The border czar, Kamala Harris, has yet to visit. We know for a fact there's overwhelming numbers of folks coming across illegally. And just as important, Biden refusing to send people back, refusing to deport people. So he's creating a compounding crisis. And then you just look at the global scope of completely feckless negotiations, lack of strategy at the Pentagon. Blinken himself admits, I think the other day, they were going to open the reopen the door to Iran, and they have no plan. So that's a really good idea. And you've seen Austin, we talked about just last week, General Austin, the current Secretary of Defense, doing all these speeches, but never actually talking about what the strategy is going to be, who the enemy is, and how we're going to address it.
How do you see them approaching China, Tony? I mean, there's a quote in the op-ed, the Communist People's Republic of China has grown in 42 years from diplomatic recognition to America's chief global competitor in every important sphere, militarily, economic, and technological. China aggressively confronts the U.S. on every geostrategic front, including Taiwan. Where do you see the administration on China?
Well, unfortunately, going nowhere. I met with a member of a fellow think tank yesterday to go through this very fact. We recognize the need to establish a grand strategy which addresses exactly what you just said. We don't have that. And if you don't have something that tells you how to go about defining and expanding your understanding of a threat, you're doomed to the outcome of failure. And that's what we're concerned about right now, Rick, that in every aspect, China is dominating and attempting to expand its domination of many markets. And militarily, they've talked about their clear and defined objectives of obtaining control of the Pacific Rim and then going beyond that. So the enemies here are being very clear in what they're doing. The problem is the administration, which is supposed to be, the smartest administration in the room with all these votes that got them into office, seem completely unable to understand the reality in which we live. And I'm not trying to be over the top saying that. It's just everything they touch immediately starts going in a direction which is not positive for the American people. And again, just look at what's going on. And by the way, I hate to, look, we've been talking about this before the Biden administration came in, Rick. We talked over the last 3 years through the op-eds I did about Biden's complete inability to call things correctly regarding national security and foreign policy. And yet, he was elected and here we are, and somehow all the results we forecast would happen are happening. But that's a long way of just trying to answer your question. But no, what we're on the road for is another, because you bring up Carter, I think we're on the road for another Iran hostage crisis. As a lot of people remember, the real failure, one of the main failures of the Carter administration, was the allowance of the Iranians to take our hostages and hold them in Iran, and then followed up on that with the Desert One debacle. Unfortunately, I'm forced to forecast here, Rick, that's where we're going. We as much as we're seeing Carter-esque behavior everywhere else, we're going to see the same thing develop in foreign policy.
Well, it's just kind of scary. If you look at the southern border as example. Yep. It's just another example of how they just sort of really don't get it. I mean, if you look at the deportation numbers, in March of 2020, we deported 19,249 illegal immigrants. In March 2021, it was down to 3,746. In April of 2020, it was nearly 10,000. In April of this year, 3,700.
Right.
And you look at the cartels, the dangers of the cartels, the corruption, the power they have in Mexico, and now the power the cartels have in the U.S., and not just Texas and Arizona.
Right. In any normal circumstance, with this level of failure in the first 100 days, people would really literally be talking about moving them out, because this we can I don't know if we're going to survive another 3.5 years of this, because it's just that bad, and there's no way to put a fine point on it. The first thing Biden needs to do is figure out how to bring the right people in if they're going to save all this. I suspect he won't do that. But to your point, the southwest border is at collapse. The national security enterprise is being is very expensive, spending a lot of money on something that'll do absolutely nothing if pushed. And as we've seen, they have no idea what to do diplomatically. And you know, I'm sure you've talked had other folks on today talk about the economic failure of why they missed everything, the increased taxes, the increased regulations. These things are all going to smother the economy. And again, none of this is going to benefit the American people. It's all horrible.
That's just the economics of the cartels that we are funding. Basically, we are allowing them to be funded with the number of people who are crossing the border. You know, the operation of the cartel bringing them across, they are compensated for those trips across the border. So they're getting millions of dollars, and we're just allowing that to go forward.
So again, Rick, this is where, who benefits? Who benefits? Well, you just mentioned who benefits. And why? Why would we allow those cartels, those individuals, to benefit from the ill-gotten gain? And the answer is, I know in a normal world, we would go after those leadership targets. I spent a lot of time in my career going after terrorist leaders. I spent some time doing counter-drug leaders, you know, in the linear approach back in the 90s when we went after the drug cartels. There seems to be no committed effort to organize around defeating those engaged at the top level. And therefore, when you open the border, these people roll in and they create these massive criminal enterprises, which, again, as I mentioned in the beginning, Kamala Harris has yet to go down and try to talk to the folks who are involved in this. There's a number of things. EPIC, the intelligence center in El Paso, that would be one of the first places I would try to concentrate effort to try to get a hold on how to stop this. Oh, by the way, Sergio de la Pena, the former Assistant Undersecretary of Defense for Western Hemisphere, worked this. You know, we've talked about him before. He actually created conditions in Latin America to stop these things because they had our Latin American allies engaged with us. And instead, Mexico is now accusing us of violating their sovereignty. It's just not getting any better.
Lieutenant Colonel Tony Schaefer, as always, Tony, thank you very much. And we refer you to Tony's podcast, which you can find at thelondoncenter.org, the Thought to Action podcast. Tony, thank you very much, and have a wonderful Mother's Day weekend with the family.
You too. Thanks, Rick.
You betcha. It is now 7:45. It is the Saturday morning update. KT McFarland joins us next, but first, Michelle Murray's in the WMAL Traffic Center.
So far, traffic is moving well on the Beltway throughout Maryland and Virginia. Earlier incident on the outer loop at Gallows Road has been cleared to the shoulder. Getting reports of a crash on the GW Parkway southbound near the Key Bridge, but so far not seeing any delays there. And also in the district, do watch out for some road work on the eastbound freeway in the vicinity of the 3rd Street Tunnel. Now from GarageDroidPair.com, the WMAL Stormwatch 7 forecast.
A few scattered showers will be possible early on this morning, but we will see a little bit of sunshine breaking through midday. High temperatures today should reach the mid-60s. Some isolated showers will be possible through the afternoon hours, mainly north of D.C. Later on tonight, temperatures dip into the 40s through the region. Cool start to Mother's Day. Mother's Day, mostly cloudy skies. Some highly isolated showers, the best chance north and west. High temperatures in the mid-60s. I'm 7 News meteorologist Alex Liggett, the Stormwatch 7 Weather Center.
46 degrees in the nation's capital at 7:46 on the Saturday morning update on WMAL. 7:49 Saturday morning update, WMAL. It is an honor to be joined by KT McFarland. And, of course, she is the author of Revolution, Trump, Washington, and We the People. She initiated the Trump administration's reassessment of a range of national security issues, beginning with North Korea and China. And I would also like to point out that KT's distinguished career includes national security posts in the Nixon, Ford, and Reagan administrations, as well as the Trump administration. Good morning and happy Mother's Day, KT.
Oh, right. Thank you very much. I've forgotten it. Tomorrow's Mother's Day. I have 5 children. 6 grandchildren, so I should expect a big day tomorrow. Thank you.
Absolutely. Well, have an enjoyable one. In the meantime, though, we have the Biden jobs report. We're looking at the southern border. We just talked about that with Lieutenant Colonel Tony Schaefer. We talked about China with Tony. We've got Iran. We've got the emphasis on green. We have the emphasis on woke. And there's sort of an overall feeling of weakness versus the strength of what we saw in the Trump administration. I want to get into that topic with you. And I think one example of it is sort of what you've just witnessed on your return from Florida. You've been in Florida, now you're back in New York, and the contrast in what we're seeing in that state versus New York.
Well, first of all, in Florida, the pandemic's over. I mean, people aren't wearing masks, maybe into a couple of grocery stores, but that's about it. But you drive down the highway in Florida, and what do you see? Help wanted signs in every store, from drug stores, liquor stores, restaurants for sure, car washes. I mean, you can drive a mile and see 20 help wanted signs. The official unemployment rate in Florida is 5%, and I can't believe it's going to stay there. It's going to go to 0%. People are, you're getting $50 in the Tampa McDonald's if you even arrange for an interview. If you go in for an interview, they give you a $50 bonus, even if you don't take the job. So things are thriving in Florida. Florida, by the way, which never locked down. And I know a lot about Florida just because my daughter is in the state legislature. Florida balances its budget. Florida doubled its rainy day fund during this period. When Florida worried that its tax revenues were not going to be sufficient, they cut their budget by $1 billion. It turns out that they were wrong. They could have cut it. They could have added $1 billion and they would have broken even. And it's the best governed state in the union. Why? Because they've had almost three decades of Republican trifecta of the House, the Senate, and the governor's mansion. And there's a reason people are flocking to come to states like Tennessee and Florida and Texas and the Carolinas. It's because they're well-governed. And now I come back to New York. What do I see? Oh, God, everybody's wearing 2 masks to go outside and walk around. The economy is terrible. The state needed to be bailed out to the tune of, I think, $6 or $7 billion by a federal government that has remained in lockdown frenzy, and a federal government which, by 2022, will no longer be run by Democrats, and it's no longer going to bail out these red states.
Not to mention the crime rate in New York City.
Oh, yeah. But you can't even go around Manhattan at night anymore because it's the drive-by shootings. I mean, in the fanciest neighborhoods with doorman buildings, A, the buildings are, a lot of them are now deserted, and secondly, the crime rate is terrible. No, New York, sadly, at my home for the last 35 years, New York is in a death spiral.
Well, this is just an example of a Republican-run state versus a Democrat-run state.
Sure.
And as you sort of extrapolate that to the national level, at what point does the American, you know, public kind of come to their senses on all of this?
Well, the American people actually have an enormous amount of common sense, which in my experience is absent in Washington, D.C. And the American people aren't nuts. And the crazier all the stuff you're talking about, the cancel culture, the woke Nazis, the lockdown enforcers, the anti-American, all the crazier these people get, the faster that the normal common American folk are going to rise up and say, okay, enough of this silliness. I mean, Joe Biden is Jimmy Carter 2.0, but he's Jimmy Carter 2.0 on steroids. Jimmy Carter, for the people who are not old enough to remember what it was like, gasoline prices rose exponentially, unemployment rose exponentially, the economy didn't grow, it stagnated, and we were getting pushed around by every country in the world. Well, it sounds like sort of where we're going to be in the next couple of months. But people are drunk on the sugar high spending of the Biden administration. And to be a conservative right now, it's a lonely place, and it's a really lonely place in Washington, because you're called everything from a racist to a, well, who knows? You can fill in the blank of all the terrible things you're called. And you feel like, has the country just gone nuts? I've gone through these stages of grief where at first, like a year ago, I thought, oh, come on, these people can't be serious. This woke stuff, this cancel culture stuff, this critical race theory, nobody's going to believe that. Well, it turns out a lot of people do believe it. But a lot of people who do believe it are the elites on the coast and the people in Washington, D.C. So my second stage is, well, they are going to do this, but my third stage is they're not going to do it for long, because the crazier these people get, the faster the American people are going to say we've had enough. And there are three canaries in the coal mine. Texas school board elections last week, where parents overwhelmingly rejected the woke culture. The parents in the New York private schools, where they pay for the privilege of sending their children, they're deserting those schools in droves. Number three is that the mass migration out of the blue states into the five red states. These are the canaries in the coal mine. And eventually, the Democrats, who were so eager to establish one-party rule by packing the Supreme Court, by controlling social media, by giving Washington, D.C. statehood, where 700,000 federal employees get to have their own two private senators. I mean, at the end of the day, they're going to establish one-party rule just in time for the Republicans to be the one party. It's so foolish. I mean, it's a train wreck ready to happen and starting to happen. And, you know, I'm glad that ultimately after Jimmy Carter came Ronald Reagan and a generation of good governance. But I'm sad that we have to go through these next 2 years.
Mention the wokeness. It is Mother's Day weekend, and we have a Congresswoman talking about removing the term mothers and moving it to birthing people. Another step in the wrong direction. How is this perceived overseas? We hear this constant drumbeat of social justice in America, how evil America has been since its inception, how evil it is to minorities. What does that say overseas, not only to our adversaries, but to our allies?
Well, we have two enemies right now. We have the enemy from within, which is trying to destroy American history and American culture and American self-esteem. And we have an enemy from without, which is trying to replace the United States as the global world leader, at which point it will rewrite the rules of order and demand that everyone follow China's lead. There are only two superpowers right now teaching their students that America is evil and racist and immoral and unworthy. That's China and the United States. I mean, there are these cultural revolutionaries that are trying to erase our society. They're doing grievous harm to our national security, because what happens is that the Chinese are using the arguments of the woke culture against us in the world arena, and they're saying America's not worthy to lead. And as a result of that, countries aren't going to follow a country that doesn't love itself. Reagan understood that one of the greatest things he did, it wasn't fixing the economy for a generation, it wasn't winning the Cold War, it was restoring America's sense of patriotism and belief in itself. Without that, we can't deal with any other adversary. So I find the enemy from within is far more dangerous. But again, I have full confidence in the common sense of the American people. I mean, once they go after Prince Charming in Walt Disney's Sleeping Beauty, I mean, come on, guys. These people are nuts. And the American people aren't nuts. And if they're counting on the American people to be nuts, well, that shows how little common sense they really have.
K.T. McFarland, the author of Revolution, Trump, Washington, and We the People. Thank you as always, and have a lovely Mother's Day tomorrow.
Thank you very much. And the best to all of you ladies out there who are indeed mothers and grandmothers. I wish you the best.
Thank you. And that's it for the Saturday morning update. Garden Sense follows the 8 o'clock news with Heather Curtis. And do have a wonderful Mother's Day weekend.
WMAL-FM, Woodbridge, Washington. America's reopening. Hear it here. 105.9 FM, WMAL. A Cumulus station. News now. WMAL.